Hi, this is Harlem, and welcome to another edition of the Fresh Ubuntu podcast, and I just want to thank you for joining me this week. Look for some things to change in the near future. I don't know if you have noticed, but these new segments have been really quite long, and I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think that's a really good thing, actually. But in an effort to keep my podcasts within, you know, 30, 35 minutes in that time frame, I may go to two podcasts a week, one for the news segment, because there is a lot of news to cover, especially the closer we get to Gutsy Gibbon, the news will just exponentially increase. Also, the open source arena is heating up quite a bit as well, so there is a lot of things to cover, and Peter and I are trying to cover the more pertinent things, especially pertinent to Ubuntu, but nevertheless, there are some things that we cannot ignore, so we may do a podcast specifically for the news segment, and then another podcast where we do other segments such as the Man Page Minute and package highlights and that kind of thing. So look for those things to change here as soon as I can get the format down and as soon as I talk to other folks who might want to participate as well. So anyway, thank you for joining me. Enjoy the rest of the podcast. We have, of course, this week, it will be the news and the rest of the segments, the Man Page Minute, and other segments as well. So thank you for joining me, and I will be back after this quick message.
The Nightcast, the podcast that tunes tech into your way of life and lets technology work for you.
The Nightcast.
After episode 38, we lost the signal.
But the Nightcast is back. October 11th, 2007, the front seat feed of the digital domain will be bursting with life with new episodes of the Nightcast.
The Nightcast.
Tune tech into your way of life and check us out at www.nightwise.com or look for the Nightcast in iTunes. The one and only place to go on the edge of real and cyberspace, The Nightcast.
The Nightcast. www.knighthwise.com.
And good afternoon. This is Harlem with my co-host, Peter Nicolaitis. And we are here to do the news. First of all, how are you doing, Peter?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing great as well. A little bit better than last week. I don't know about you. We've been kind of recovering from some sickness around here. So if I'm acting a little slow or talking a little bit slow, it's because I'm a little bit under the weather.
Well, when you go to mix the podcast, you can just up the bit rate or the sampling rate just a little bit so that it comes out faster.
Yeah, I am a master editor, if anything else. So anyway, let's get on with the news. This week, we have a couple of reviews about Gutsy Gibbon, which will be released in about mid-October. This one is from the techtolero.org blog, and he reviews Gutsy Gibbon Ubuntu 7.10. And as he mentions at the very top, some additions to Gutsy Gibbon, among those additions is going to be native NTFS partition support by default, and you'll be able to read and write to NTFS partitions while you're in Ubuntu. And you can do that now, but you have to install NTFS-3G driver. In Gutsy, however, it will be included by default. And you can also, they also use Fuse to enable you to have reading and writing capability.
And I think that's pretty pretty good, because I use a bunch of different Linux Live CDs for data recovery, for instance, if you have a like a failing hard drive or a Windows machine that won't boot. So the ability to not only read data but also write to an NTFS partition right out of the box without having to install the NTFS 3G stuff, I think that's a huge time saver. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, and like for myself, I do dual boot on one of my computers, my desktop, and every now and again I'll have to get something off of my Windows partition. Not too often, though. I guess for IT professionals, people who do this for a living, it'll be much more useful than for the average user.
Another thing, though, is that if you're dual booting, if you frequently go back and forth between Windows and Ubuntu, one thing that I've had to do in the past is maintain a FAT32 partition. Not a great file system compared to either NTFS or most of the Linux file systems. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that I wouldn't have to do that anymore, because generally I have to have like three partitions on my drive, one for Linux, one for Windows, and then a common partition in the middle for data sharing. So the ability to read and write NTFS takes that out of the mix. So I'm really excited about that.
Also included out of the box in Gutsy Gibbon is CompHiz Fusion will be enabled by default, and they'll have three settings, one with no effect, one with normal effects, and extra effects, and you'll be able to configure that in the settings manager in Gutsy Gibbon. You can get additional interface enhancements with much greater tweaking possibilities. You can install CompHiz config-settings-manager, which is a package located in the Universe repository, and then you'll be able to do advanced desktop effects settings. Also mentioned in the review is the xorg.cfg graphical user interface setting manager. And that will be available also in Gutsy Gibbon with the inclusion of Bulletproof X. Bulletproof X is the ability to, if you cannot get onto your X window, it will default to a VESA mode, that's 800 by 600, 256 colors, or a VGA mode, 640 by 480 with 16 colors. So either way, you'll be able to get into a graphical user interface to do some fixing.
I'm really looking forward to the Bulletproof X, because just right now, for instance, I have a machine here in the office that some kind of update, I don't know how often, it was a fairly old install of Ubuntu, but sometime in the recent or not too recent past, the X.org configuration file got trashed or something changed, and it won't start up the graphical installer anymore. And I have no idea what changed, because it was working fine one day and then just stopped working, you know, sometime later. So the Bulletproof configuration, I'm really looking forward to that.
A new desktop search will be also included in Ubuntu Gutsy Gibbon, a desktop search engine called Tracker, which will be replacing the Beagle. And it's going to be written in the C language, which will help make it a little more quicker. As far as that goes, I don't feel one way good or bad towards either one of them. I didn't really use them that much, and everything's in my home folder, and you can find it real easy, especially if you take the time to look. But anyway.
And I'll be covering one of those, a way to do that in an upcoming Man Page Minute, too.
Oh, cool. Great.
I'm just hoping that with Tracker, I used Beagle very, very little, but I'm assuming that since they're touting it as being written in C and being very fast, I guess that has to imply that Beagle is not so fast, and, you know, so
and,
let's
and
hope
you know
that
what?
It's just...
It was very slow. It was slow and used up a lot of resources, and it's kind of surprising to me why they even added it into Feisty, but whatever. They are now getting rid of it and putting Tracker on. Moving on, they have detection of a hot-plugged USB printer. So plug-and-play printers will be coming to Gutsy, and which is really nice, because I remember installing Dapper and having to go through this weird thing, installing a printer for HP. In fact, I did a podcast about that, which is probably now you don't really need it anymore. So that podcast is no longer valid. For any of you who are going back to do those other podcasts, just ignore that one. Otherwise, they also are coming with a virtual PDF printer along with hot plug USB printers. Things like printing in Firefox to a PDF file, printing a GIMP file into PDF.
And that's handy too, because a lot of applications. I mean, when I think about PDFs on Linux, the first thing that comes to mind is OpenOffice. And, of course, that has PDF compatibility built right in. So you can just export right to a PDF, and that's handy. But if you don't have that, like you were saying, like with Firefox or something, I used to hit some websites and I'd have to log in to access the content, but I would want to share it with friends, so I'd send people a link, and then they would say, oh, the site requires a login, I can't get in. So what I would do is I would stick it on a PDF and, you know, just email the PDF to them. So that's, I think that's a good thing, step forward.
Yeah, it'll make people's lives a little bit easier. They also have a free Flash player in Ubuntu 7.10 called Gnash, G-N-A-S-H. It's an open source, free and open source version of the Adobe Flash player.
That's right. We talked about this a little before we started recording, and I think we pretty much agree on it that we would love to see a native Linux Flash player that was open source, you know, from Adobe, but that's probably not going to happen. So, you know, I support the GNU project and wanting to do a free Flash player. As I understand it right now, I believe Gnash is approximately like Flash 7 compatible. Mm-hmm. So it's not up there, obviously, with Flash 9 and the latest and greatest features. But I think it's a pretty good alternative. And if you are into, you know, 100% free software, then this is your only option for playing Flash movies. So I hope that they, you know, I'm sure that it's going to continue to get better. I don't know if they're going to be able to continue along with, you know, what Adobe introduces to Flash, but, you know, let's hope.
Yeah, and I, you know, I wouldn't leave it out of the realm of possibility that Adobe will open source its Flash codec. You know, ATI is coming out with open source drivers, NVIDIA, et cetera, et cetera. I wouldn't put it past Adobe to do something like that, but who knows?
I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Right. Among the packages included in Gutsy will be the GIMP 2.4 and OpenOffice 2.3. Also in the Gutsy repositories, in the universe repository, will be the next version or the alpha version of Firefox, codenamed Gran Paradiso. And you put an alpha release on your computer once of Firefox, and you have any insight on that?
Yeah, it wasn't a very pleasant experience because it sort of intertwined itself with my regular release, and I don't know. I'm hoping they've got it better if you do it this way. This was on Windows, and it was a couple years back anyway. I think it was the Firefox 2.0 alpha. And it just, you know, the icons got switched and my extensions got all mangled and I couldn't easily extract the 2.0 alpha and get it out of my 1.5 or my 1.0, whichever I was using at the time. So I'm a little bit hesitant to try alpha releases of the browsers, but, you know, if they say they've got a stable way to test that out and try it out and keep them isolated, then that'll be really cool.
And lastly, the kernel that is going to be introduced in Gutsy Gibbon will let me say this. Currently, we are in Feisty using 2.6.20, and in Gutsy, we will be using 2.6.22. One of the significant improvements, as this article states, is the tickless idle loop, which unifies the timer handling, makes the kernel more power efficient, which could be beneficial to laptop and notebook owners. Other than that, there seems to be a good review, a lot of good reviews of the upcoming Gutsy release, and another one here by Eugenia Lolly Carew on the osnews.com website has also given a positive review of Gutsy. However, I think she has some issues with some of the default interface. What I mean by that is that the person who wrote the article would have preferred Ubuntu to move to Vera fonts with medium hinting by default, Tango icons, and clear looks rather than trying to differentiate itself with this orange-looking feel that's a worse alternative than the GNOME defaults. But nevertheless, she says that it's a thumbs-up. Gutsy Gibbon 7.10 is a good distro and should be ready to go come October 18th. And on that note about interface, there has been, if you've been on the wiki lately, there's a article in the wiki about the default wallpaper, and there seems to be some, what would you call it? Some,
I would say a little bit of contention, maybe some debate.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. So there are some people who don't necessarily like what's coming up in at least in the artwork arena, and I, for one, am agreeable. I've said this since the inception of this podcast. I have now gotten used to the brown, specifically the Feisty, the wallpaper that's on Feisty. I've gotten used to it, and that's okay. But now they're coming out with a darker version, chocolatey with the swirly stuff, and I'm not a huge fan of it. Your thoughts, Peter?
I don't know. When I first saw the new wallpaper, I said I like it. To me, it reminded me of dark chocolate, and I mean, who doesn't like chocolate? So I actually downloaded it, and I installed it on my Windows XP machine. So I have it as dual monitor as my desktop, and as I'm saying this to you right now, I'm downloading it on one of my Ubuntu laptops too. So
great.
Three cheers for chocolate.
Some of the comments left on the wiki is, or the points that are being made about the current wallpaper, is that it looks like a brown version of some of the Vista wallpapers. It is very dark. It is inconsistent with Ubuntu's general look and feel, leans very much towards a yellow color scheme, and does not bear a connection to the human theme. And the image quality is not very good due to its grainy, out-of-focus spots. So lots of contention, lots of... I wouldn't say bad feelings right now, but there is some contention there. A lot of that contention is probably because it was kind of snuck in at the last minute. Not a lot of people got to review the artwork, so...
Yeah, I guess people are just, they want more input, and I don't know. I looked at it, and I said, I liked it. That, a lot of people have just said, from day one, the biggest... detraction or the worst thing they have to say about Ubuntu is the brown theme. This is the best looking desktop I've seen by default, if this is what actually comes by default. So I don't know. I like it.
All right.
Our next story is regarding the One Laptop Per Child project. Apparently, if you're not familiar with it, this is a plan to basically make what's called the $100 laptop and distribute it to children in developing nations. And apparently people had speculated that one of the ways they would fund the project is by selling units, their EXO laptops, in the United States and developed countries at a higher price than using the profits to give them away to kids in underdeveloped nations. And apparently they had been denying that, but now they have said that that is what they're going to do. So I believe as of early November, you will be able to purchase a One Laptop for Child laptop for $399. Out of that, $200 will be a tax write-off. So basically you're paying $400, you get $200 back, and that pays for one laptop for you and another laptop for a child in underdeveloped country. So I think that's a grand scheme.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea too. I'm kind of curious why they hadn't done it earlier. There was a lot of buzz earlier about the one laptop per child. Everybody wanted one. They should have done this 3-4 months ago. And who knows where it could be right now. It does sound like a good idea. It's a good-looking computer.
Our next story, following up on the heels of our story last week about Macedonia installing Linux in every school, apparently Russia is following suit, and they will be distributing some kind of flavor of Linux named Russian OS to every school computer in Russia by 2009. A little bit from the headlines, Russia OS installed by 2009. Furthermore, every pupil will get the opportunity to operate the applied software produced in Russia, said their Minister of Communication. So there aren't a lot of details on this yet, and I wasn't able to find out whether this is going to be a brand new distro, whether it's going to be built off of something like Debian or Ubuntu. I'm not exactly sure. But the plan is that they're going to be rolling their own Linux one way or another. So I guess we'll follow this story, and as more details unfold, we'll report on it, especially if there's an Ubuntu connection. But if anybody does have any details, feel free to shoot us an email and let us know. And then following up on that, if you'll recall from last week's news segment when I covered the Macedonia project, Harlem had this brilliant insight and said, you know, we should do more of that here. Why don't we use more open source and free software in the United States? Yeah. Well, apparently, Harlem, you're not alone. This story I picked off of LinuxWatch.com, and the headline says, Open Minds Want Linux and Open Source in American Schools. Little bit of an excerpt. Many other countries are turning to Linux and open source for their school and house computer needs. Now there's a conference for those who want to bring it to schools in the United States. So on October 9th through 11th in Indiana, they'll be hosting the Open Minds Conference. And it's advertised as the first national K-12 gathering for teachers, technicians, and education leaders to share and explore the benefits of open source in education. And I said, as soon as I heard that, I said, that was great. Harlem, you called it perfectly. We got to give you a pat on the back for getting open source into American schools. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you. Single-handedly.
And arranging that conference in such short notice, I just don't know how you did it.
I have friends.
In high places, apparently.
Right. I agree. That's I don't really have much to say about it. But,
yeah.
But it is a good idea. Let's see. Let's finish up with a article from IT Management, EarthWeb, the 7 most influential GNU Linux distributions. I guess not so surprisingly, Ubuntu made the list. But of the 7, they are Debian, the most stable distro, with 1,000 developers and some 20,000 packages and support for 11 different hardware architectures, Fedora and Red Hat Enterprise Linux, both old distros, and in this article states that it is one of the most successful commercial distributions. Gentoo is mentioned. I don't know if these are in any particular order or if this is going from 1 down to 6, but the third one mentioned was Gentoo. It was first released in 2002, gained reputation as a geeks distro, largely because it required all the packages to be compiled for maximum optimization for each system. A distro named Mandriva, originally known as Mandrake, founded in 1998, originally based off of Red Hat. Its current name currently now combines elements of Mandrake with Connectiva, a Brazilian distro it acquired in 2005. Also making it on the list is Slackware, founded by a gentleman named Patrick Volkerding in 1993. It is the oldest distro still active today. Number 6 and 7. Number 6 is SUSE Linux Enterprise and OpenSUSE, founded in Germany in 1996. And, of course, our beloved Ubuntu making the list of the top 7. Now, my thing is, why do they stop at 7? Seven seems like a odd number to stop at. Why can't they do like the top 10 most influential GNU Linux distributions?
Round it out or something, or give it the top 5 or nice round number. Yeah, I don't know.
I noticed there are some elements of each of the distros in Ubuntu. Ubuntu being based on Debian, having really nice graphical user interface and good documentation. It's also trying to gain commercial success, just like SUSE is and Red Hat.
Yeah, I think that Ubuntu is like Red Hat and SUSE. I think we're going to see more commercial adoption as time goes by. It does have a lot of the same elements. Obviously, since it's based on Debian, it does have a lot of Debian's characteristics, although as we've discussed previously, some of the stability and ease of maintenance appears to be lacking recently. Comparing it to some of the others, just compared to, say, Red Hat, I prefer the apt package management system versus RPM. So for me, that right there, that's a winner. We used to run Gentoo in our web serving environment, and that was just a little too much. I applaud Gentoo for its flexibility and the way you can customize it, but it was just so esoteric when it comes to configuring it. And someone said at, I think it was one of the O'Reilly conferences last year when they were speaking about Ubuntu, and they said, Gen 2 is fine if you want to start by banging two rocks together and, you know, build up from there. So I laughed my head off when I heard that because it was so true.
Yeah,
I think, and the only reason that Ubuntu was last is that that list was alphabetical. So I don't know why they picked 7, but that's why we came in 7th on that list.
Is that, how'd you figure that out?
He says here in alphabetical order is a list of the 7 distributions that have most affected GNU Linux as a whole. You got to read between the lines, right. And sometimes you have to actually read the lines.
Right. Yeah. Ubuntu made it in the top 7. And that's,
it's quite conceivable that Ubuntu is the most influential Linux distribution. Who knows?
Right. Very well could be. And there's arguments for and against that. That is going to end our news segment. And if you would like to participate in the discussion, email me at freshubuntu@gmail.com. Or you can call the number that I had just conveniently forgotten. And anyway, you can get that off of the website. Please call. Or do the other, email, and you can participate in the discussion of the news and that kind of thing. Stop by and say hello. Either say hi to myself, Harlem, or to Peter. And that does it for the news this week. I have a couple of emails this week from some longtime listeners. And let me read the first one from Adder1972. That's his screen name. He says, "Hi, Harlem. I just wanted to congratulate you on the new format of your great podcast. It's now even more interesting, and I'm looking forward to it every time. I also enjoyed your interview with Mark Shuttleworth this summer. Keep up the good work. Regards from Oslo, Norway." And I kind of like receiving all these emails, especially from emails from other countries. As far as Oslo, Norway, I've got listeners in Germany, in Belgium, in Australia, et cetera, et cetera. Also from this gentleman named Jason Watkins, he says, congratulations on another great show. A couple of points I would like to add on. PC Linux OS is based on Mandriva, which he strongly dislikes. And he says, Mandriva has been nothing but a headache to me. However, he states that PC Linux OS runs fine for me in Parallels, and it's easy to use right out of the box. Ubuntu has some competition in that arena. He also has to agree with my co-host Peter on the feasibility that the Mac has to offer. He is an IT professional, and he needs something that works, that just works. And that requirement negates Windows XP and /Vista. However, he states that it's 50% of his installation. He also says that Ubuntu is nice and stable, but not ready for the average user, especially on laptops with wireless. I don't know if you listen to this podcast, Peter, but he is a guest host on the Friends in Tech in the Trenches podcast, and you can find the RSS feed at kevindevin.com. I will post a link in the show notes.
Yep, I do listen in the Trenches, and it's one of my favorite podcasts. It's always fun to listen to. And I was trying to place the name when you said you had an email from Jason Watkins. I'm like, where do I know that name. I've heard it somewhere. And then I was like, oh, of course. He's on In the Trenches. Duh, yeah. I have one little comment to say. When he said that PC Linux OS works well out of the box, the other week when we heard that PC Linux OS topped the DistroWatch charts, I was inspired to go and download a copy to check it out. So I downloaded myself a copy of the live CD and put it into one of my HP notebooks, just to boot from it, just to see what it was. And it wasn't able to identify my graphics card properly and set up an X11 session, so I didn't have any graphics. So there's one step where, you know, it may work well in Parallels, but right out of the box on the real thing on my live CD on my laptop, Ubuntu still wins.
Huh. I'm gonna have to give it a shot. I'll do that myself and see if that if it works out for me. I'll give you a full update on that in the future. Do you have any last words, Peter?
No, I think that's it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's going to do it for us. Thank you for joining us for the news and the emails. Please do keep the emails coming. As podcasters, that's sort of like crack to us. So, thank you very much.
We're feedback addicts.
Yeah, that's it. We're jonesing right now, so please feel free to email us at freshubuntu@gmail.com. Again, you can look at the show notes for the phone number where you can leave me a voicemail. And that's through the Gizmo Project, by the way. I'll post that as well in the show notes. I will be talking to you later, and I will say goodbye. Peter, why don't you go ahead and say goodbye, too.
Goodbye, too.
All right, we're out.
Was the prettiest girl I'd ever seen. Pretty little girl, come sat next to me in your summer dress. It would be.
And, you know, this week I thought I was going to do a podcast about rotating the wallpaper. I think I'll save that for another day because we've been doing a lot of stuff in the news about one laptop per child and $100 laptops and laptops for countries that are technologically disadvantaged. And I thought this would be just as good a time as any to introduce Rob Savoy, who was here this past summer at the Ubuntu Live conference, and he was showcasing the one laptop per child. Rob Savoy is the chief technology officer for one laptop per child, and I will let him explain it to you in his own words. Or here is that a short little snippet from Rob Savoy about the one laptop per child initiative.
Hi, my name is Rob Savoy. I'm the CTO of Lulu Open Media. And basically, I've been talking about the OLPC project, which is what we officially call the $100 laptop.
You can use more of that stuff.
That's it. Little and green.
Huh?
Little, white, and green.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, the idea was that they wanted it to be so obvious from far away that this was our OLPC that if an adult steals one, you can tell from 100 feet away.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the adult models will be a different color.
Why have a OLPC laptop? Why are you offering this to the world, essentially?
Basically, the idea is to try and give children a path out of poverty, right? And you know, it's the old, you give somebody a fish or do you teach them to fish, right?
Right?
So we believe that by having a machine where all the source code, all the hardware specifications, the covers come off, it's designed for the kids to even replace components themselves, is we want to educate the children. And then as the children get older, they're educated, and we believe that through education, it will hopefully help them not only escape poverty, improve their lives, and in a distributed network world, which we're all getting into, we hope it'll actually let a lot of people stay where they've grown up, stay in their own communities. You know, a lot of countries, if you want work, you go to the city 4 hours away and you see your family three times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to try and change that. And I think just educating the world's children is really, really important. And it's kind of nice to see that after the OLPC project was announced, many, many other companies, including Intel and other folks, all pretty much endorsing this concept of, yes, let's educate the world's children. We're rich in these first world countries, right? It's our obligation to help these other countries. Not that we want to help them catch up. We just want to have them educated so that they can improve their own lives, their cultures, and their economy.
And that's going to do it for that. Thank you so much to Rob for taking the time to speak with us. He was out in the vendors area introducing folks to the One Laptop Per Child initiative. He had a couple of demo models there on hand. Very nice looking machines, green in color. As he stated earlier, the adult models will have a different color scheme. And also, I hope you get a chance. I know in the news that we were talking about the general public being able to buy one of these laptops for a little under $500. You get to give as a gift to a child who does not have a laptop computer from a technologically, let's say, for lack of a better word, technologically deprived area. You will get to give one laptop to that child and one for yourself. So if at least not going to buy one, at least spread the word and support it that way. We thank you so much, Rob, for your work out there. And that's going to do it for this segment.
Welcome to the Man Page Minute. This week I am going to be covering a very short command,
CD. CD is short for Change Directory. It's so short, in fact, that there isn't really even a man page for it, at least not on my Ubuntu Dapper Drake installation. CD is used to change the working directory. And you can think of the working directory as your default. Like, if you're typing a command to list files, if you don't specify where you are wanting the ls command to run, it will run in the default directory, or the one that you're in right now. If it helps, you can think of this as the file manager window that you're looking at. CD changes the working directory. It takes you from the directory you're in to the one that you specify. The syntax is really simple. It's CD, and then a space, and then the directory that you want to change to. So, for instance, on Ubuntu, when you open up a command prompt, you are in your home directory, which is /home/username. For instance, on my machine, that's /home/Peter. Say I want to go to the var directory off of the root. I would simply type cd/var and hit enter. And then I'm in the var directory. From there, if I do an ls, I see all of the contents of the var directory, so I know I've changed. Now, one neat trick about CD is that if you just type CD and hit enter without any arguments, it will change to your home directory. So you can always go back home just by issuing CD. That's always handy. If you want to go up a level, if you want to switch from your directory to a directory above the one you're in, for instance, if you're in home slash your, you know, your home directory, /home/Peter, for example, and you just type CD space dot dot, two periods, that takes you up a level from where you are. Another shortcut is if you type CD and then just a slash, the forward slash. Slash is a symbol for the root of your entire file system. So all your drives, your directories, etc., the root of all of that is the slash. So you can type CD slash, and that takes you to the root. So the basic uses, again, are CD and then a directory that you want to change to. CD by itself, which will take you home, CD dot dot, which takes you to the parent directory, and CD slash, which takes you to the root of the file system. That's it, and we'll see you again next week with another Man Page Minute.
Well, that is going to do it for this week. I thank you very much for joining me this week. I do hope that you enjoyed it, and I look forward to doing this again next week with Peter. You can get a hold of us at freshubuntu.org. You can leave a comment at the article of this podcast. That's where all the show notes are for all the podcasts. And that's a good way to interact with us at freshubuntu.org, or you can also leave us an email at freshubuntu@gmail.com. And for those of you who would rather leave a message through my voicemail, you can do that now by dialing this number through the Gizmo Project. It's 1-775-262-9332. That number, once again, is 1-775-262-9322. And you can leave a voicemail through my Gizmo Project account, and that will also be a great way, another great way, to get a hold of the folks here at Fresh Ubuntu Podcast, either myself, Peter, or Tim, who will shortly be with us later on in the month. That ought to cover it for this week. Again, that's freshubuntu.org, where the show notes are, freshubuntu@gmail.com, where you can leave an email. Or you can leave a voicemail at 1-775-262-9332. And that's going to do it for this week. I look forward to speaking with you again next week. On behalf of Peter and myself, we thank you very much for joining us. We will speak with you again very soon. And so before I leave, here is a spot for those of you who are living in Germany, or to my German-speaking friends. Here is a spot from Free Geek, from one of the volunteers there who used to live in Germany. Thank you very much for joining us, and I bid you farewell. See you again next week.
Hallo, wir sind Freegeek in Portland, Oregon. Ihr könnt euer eigenes Freegeek aufmachen. Geht zu www.freegeek.org/family.php. Yay!